Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
This is episode 70, everyone. We are going to recap Pearl's big weekend in Seattle, RuPaul's Drag Race, and much more in the next 2 hours. So buckle your seatbelts and settle in. It's going to be a fun ride.
All right.
Pearl, we know that you went up... Y'all, Pearl's got her chains a-clanking over here.
Right.
We know that you went up to Seattle to do your step down for Miss Nubian Pride.
Yeah,
so tell us about that.
So it was fun because I got to go up not only just with myself but with locals here, Malay and Sable.
Malay Balenciaga and Sable Jones, everyone went up to compete for this crown.
And then a girl who is originally from Sacramento but now lives in Tacoma, Washington, came out to compete also, Freedom Rights.
She was gorgeous. I saw the photos. She looked so beautiful, Freedom. Freedom
is always beautiful.
I mean, I don't know her very well, so...
Oh.
I mean, I know the name, but not anything else.
Yeah.
So...
Gorgeous girl. I know that when I found out she wanted to run, she was actually in a leg brace, so to see that she made it was incredible.
Wow. She competed in a leg brace?
No, by the time the pageant hit, she was already off the leg brace.
Oh my god, I was gonna say, like, that would have been incredible in its own right.
Right. But it was fun. The pageant was wonderful. Each girl took a category.
Yeah, I saw that the breakdown, and each girl did win at least one category.
Right.
Which is nice. That makes it a bit of a nail biter because you're not sure who's going to edge it in the end.
It was insane. And it was so cool to be able to crown someone because I've never had the opportunity to do that before.
Right.
So that was cool. To see someone else go through the process that you did just the year before is amazing. So I'm excited for Freedom. Freedom Rights is the one who won.
Freedom Rights was crowned.
So congratulations to you, Freedom.
Congratulations to first runner-up, Sable Jones, who is one of our regular and very loyal listeners. One of our loyal listeners, honey.
Girl, she brought the house down in talent.
Wow.
Like the judges were standing... Like, I think there was judges standing up. I remember seeing a girl... Who was, I don't know if she was a former or she was just there walking, representing whatever crown she had. By the time the number was over, she was walking backstage and it looked like she had just got finished performing. She did such a good job.
Wow.
So shout out to Sable Jones.
Congratulations.
Good job,
girl. It's always hard to take the talent portion, so
right.
Congratulations to Sable for winning talent.
Yeah, especially over girls like Malay because,
right.
You know, everyone just knew Malay was going to take talent, girl.
I will tell you that when I saw that Malay Balenciaga was going to be competing, she was my odds-on choice to win the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, Malay is not only an incredible performer, she's extremely well-spoken. She excels in a pageant environment.
Yeah.
And I've never seen her not shine in a pageant situation, so...
Yeah,
I was convinced and certain that she was going to do extremely well for herself.
Yeah, she has won almost every preliminary pageant that she's run for.
And won almost, I mean, she came in first runner-up twice at Miss Gay United States, so...
Yeah.
I mean, she went on to do well for herself at a national level, too, so... Congratulations from Malay Balenciaga as well for going up there and traveling up to compete. It's just exciting and fun to compete.
It was so exciting. It was so exciting. And to see what the girls brought, like Malay's urban wear or African wear was incredible. She had like this golden thing with feathers coming up out of her head with this like this neck collar with sporks, like golden metal sporks coming out of her neck. With like African fabric wrapped all around it in this beautiful African print gown. It was lovely.
Wow.
Terrific. Lovely.
Yeah, and I read somewhere that, no, actually Sable told me that she thought that one of the judges may not have liked her evening gown. Was it the gold one that she wore? Like, I saw her in this really beautiful gold dress. I loved it.
It was gold. I think the critique she got was that it looked good from the front, but in the back, it didn't compliment her figure.
Okay. I mean, that's possible. I only saw it from the front. It was so beautiful in the
front.
It
was beautiful. Another fabulous gown made by the talented Kipper Snacks.
So, well, congratulations to the ladies who competed up in Seattle. Congratulations to the current Miss Nubian Pride 2017. Miss
Freedom Rights. And congratulations to Regine Dynasty, the founder of Nubian Pride. Good luck with this girl. I know she's going to have such a great reign with you guys. It was her third year competing, so I know she really wanted it.
Freedoms?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That is something, you know, and once again, you guys, a lot of people go out and knock it out of the ballpark and take home the crown the first time they do something, but not everybody does. And
right, and that doesn't have to be everybody's journey, girl. Like, that just shows how relentless that she really is, and that's amazing.
And the fact that you can, every time you compete or every time you try something, you learn from it, ideally. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're...
I know I do.
So, actually, I was...
And I know that sounds cliche, but it's real.
It is real. And I was with some people today, and one of them asked about, you know, this idea of failure. And he's like, I find myself, like, focusing and feeling like when I try something and it doesn't go very well, I feel like a failure. I feel like I failed. And I was explaining to him that, you know, I've been teaching this drag makeup class at Google, and we just completed our third class. And the second class was 2 hours spent just trying to teach these people to cover their eyebrows, mm-hmm. right? And so they're sitting there and they're trying, and I mean, I was giving them pretty clear instructions, but this is something they've never done before. These are tech people and people who are not really particularly artistic-minded, mm-hmm. and whatever. And so some of them made a real catastrophe out of something that's pretty simple, which is, you know, it's not rocket science, but they were confused by it. And a lot of them were so frustrated because they're perfectionists and they're right. used to sort of like, they're kind of almost prodigies probably in their field. And they probably just sit down and knock something out right the first time, every time. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? This is not that, you know, you have to learn from this. And that's why I gave us a full class to learn how to do this.
Yeah. Otherwise you don't grow.
Right.
Because I'll tell you right now, like going back to Sable competing, like she did not look like everything that she presented, except for maybe her talent, she didn't look like the regular Sable Jones we see here in the city. Like, she was wearing long, beautiful hair. Like, she was giving younger looks. It was amazing to see her try something different. And I'm sure she'll say that she's learned so much just by doing this.
Right. And with the students, like, you know, they may have appeared to have failed the first outing, but they came back this last Monday and they were all able to cover their brows really easily because they'd gone through it and you know, they've grown from, they still had questions and they were still unsure of themselves. But girl, the second class was about foundation and contouring and highlights. That one was especially, especially rewarding to look at because, you know, these people, some of them didn't have the proper makeups or whatever. And so I just brought, you know, there's people of all skin colors, all uh-huh. races and ethnicities in there. And I just brought a clown white, my own highlight, which is like a, you know, pale creamy color, and then a dark, dark contour. And I was like, if you didn't bring makeup, you can play with these. Do not expect yourself to look like you'd be stage ready because you got right. white, a medium,
right.
and then like something that's so dark. I was calling it the color Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. But,
oh my God.
You know, I mean, it's very dark. It's like Ms. Palou dark. Like
you with Miss Palou dark.
Girl, Miss Palou knows that she's dark, girl. It's like I got it when I was with Miss Palou, and I thought that she might use it as a contour. Girl, it's that dark. I'm talking like dark, honey. So anyway, we were putting them on, and they're trying it, and I kept saying, "Why are you guys so afraid to fail? Like, why are you?" I kept that was you know going back to that original question about failure. I said, "Why are you so afraid to fail at this? You can't fail at this makeup. You can just go wash it off. If it's not right, you wash it off."
Right.
I was like, but when you put it on, you have to try. You can't just sort of put it on and be like, this looks a mess, and then be done with it.
Yeah.
I was like, put it on, start doing what I've shown you, blending. Like
blending changes a bit everything.
Girl, it does. One queen was like, oh, you know, like, this is ruined or whatever. And I said, oh, come here. And I took a sponge and I just blended the shit out of it, and then he was like, oh my god, it's beautiful. I was like, right, like, all you have to do is actually blend it. Like, I think that for people who do not do drag, they sort of think the makeup goes on and just looks the way it's supposed to look.
Girl, when it comes to blending, let me tell you.
Wrong, girls.
Let me tell you, it took me a year to know what blending was.
You have to, I mean, that's the thing. You put the makeup on, I told him, I'm like, you put the makeup on the way I drew them these diagrams and stuff, put it on this way, and then you have to blend it. You have to, like, pat it. They would be like, you're trying to, don't rub, pat. I would always be like, don't rub it, pat. Rubbing smears, patting blends. You're like, for the listeners out there, rubbing smears, patting blends.
Right.
Pat that shit. So anyway, it was one of those things where, like, I think so many people are afraid of the idea of failure
that
they won't try something.
And it ruins the learning.
Absolutely.
The process.
Well, I think that some people are so afraid of, like, they only want to do something if they know they're going to win. They only want to do it if they know that they're going to be the best or whatever. And I'm like, well, the likelihood that you're going to do something the first time and be the best is pretty minimal. And if you don't...
That's not saying don't play to win. Definitely play to win, but...
Right, but you have to understand that there's a lot more along the way that can be gained.
It's so much more than that.
And I'm telling you right now, sometimes you can win a lot more from failing than you can from winning. Because winning sometimes, I think, cements negative ideas in people's head. It's like, this worked before, so I'm going to... And it might have worked once, but it doesn't mean it's going to work twice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can adapt and grow and change, then that's probably preferred. So... Anyway, well, congratulations once again to the winners of the Nubian Pride pageant and all of the contestants, promoters, and producers of that event. Sounds like everyone had an amazing time.
It was a blast. I had a great time out there. Like, I felt like it was all going to be work, but I had more fun than I thought.
Did you happen to see Felicia Lamar? Because I know that she was
up. I didn't.
I know that Felicia Lamar was up in that general area of Seattle. I saw that she just returned. Yeah, she said that she's going to be off to New York City. She's taking a job in New York City.
Oh, well, shout out to Felicia. Good luck in New York, boo.
Girl, yes, honey. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Right.
So, anyway, there's that. I'm trying to think of what else. My weekend felt really kind of low-key. I spent a lot of time with my best friend, Shigellarella, and then I did my show on Sunday. I will tell you guys that everything we talked about last week in regards to my show, I still think it's taken a toll on me. I feel emotionally like a little bit drained, but I sat down with my manager at the cafe, Chadwick, and we had a conversation. So everything right now has been completely finalized for those who have been fans.
Oh my goodness.
Those who have been fans for the last 7 years of the Glamazone at the cafe, my Sunday night show. Please, please show yourself between now and July 29th, because July 29th will be my, I think it's July 29th or July 30th, whichever one is the last Sunday of July will be my last Sunday at the cafe. So we are planning to do the 30th. Sorry, but you guys, July 30th will be my last night at the cafe, and we are planning, currently I am planning rather, a big blowout special with a lot of the friends and a lot of the girls that have been instrumental in the success of that show over the last 7 years of it. So please, if you're in the Bay Area, mark your calendars. Come on out on July 30th for our final show. And 2 weeks before that, come out for the 18th New Talent Showcase, because we are going to crown one more girl.
Oh my goodness.
One more girl. I want, you know, 18 is a much better number than 17. So
yeah.
Let's crown one more girl before we go out with a bang, because one of the things that I'm most proud of over the last God, better part of a decade that we've been doing that show is the fact that we have brought so many young talents onto the scene. And if we can do it for one more girl, just to give her that boost over the hump and get her out there in the world, that is what we want to do. So if you are a performer in the Bay Area who wants to compete, please hit me up on all of my social media. Of course, my Twitter is TheGlamazonPDM, or look me up at Pollo Del Mar Fans on Facebook. Send me a message, tweet me. Let me know that you're interested, and we will get you on that lineup. I've already got a couple girls who are lined up. Florida Man and Anna Lee are already signed up to do it. So we're looking forward to that. And it's bittersweet, but, you know, everything has to come to an end. And now I get to focus my attentions on potentially other exciting things. And, you know, I'm still figuring out what some of those are going to be. But I think that some of them are going to be more creative, perhaps, than just producing and hosting a show. So hoping, fingers crossed for that.
Oh, what are you thinking of getting your hands in?
Well, you know, I do a lot of writing, so I'm going to continue my writing, of course. But I'm also looking at one of the big things that I'm thinking about doing to really kind of keep myself busy and to get my drag name even more out there is, after doing some elements of the RuPaul's Drag Race challenge, like the audition process, I think that I am going to begin writing, filming, and editing a comedy series for drag.
Huh.
So that's what I'm looking at, you guys. I'm not going to give any more details than that, but that could be my next big adventure. And I think that, bitch, if some of those scripts that they put on Drag Race make it there,
right?
Like, honey, I can certainly do that. Shit. I'd probably do it much better than those whores do. So,
well,
I mean, speaking of which, we're going to get into the RuPaul's Drag Race later on, but
you do not look pleased.
Well, I mean, did you read any of the spoiler information?
I didn't, but I did hear.
So, yeah. I mean, we're not going to give away the spoilers for the finale, you guys, because that would be shady. But let's just say that the finale that's coming up in a couple weeks is going to blow people away. They're going to lose their minds. But we still have to recap.
I can't wait for it.
We still have to recap the final four and then narrow and see who goes home this week on the final to become the top three going into the finale. We've got all of that. Meanwhile, we're going to take a quick break because I need to get my mind around what the hell we're supposed to be talking about, because I'm just...
Just a mess.
I know. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Cam, my name is Pearl Tease, and I approve this queef cam.
Party Foul Radio is brought to you each week in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine. For all the latest news, entertainment, and photo pictorials of Northern California's LGBTQ nightlife, pick up your copy of Left Magazine in the Castro today. Or, if from around the world, visit them online at liveleft.com. That's San Francisco's Left Magazine at liveleft.com. All right, everybody. We are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
You guys, last week we said it was episode 69. We were like, we need some scandalous whores on the show.
Girl, wait, time out. Speaking of scandalous whores.
Oh, damn. Are you going to talk about Lexi Shimmers?
Girl.
You guys, our favorite scandalous whore, our Knob Hill Theater correspondent, Lexi Shimmers.
Girl.
Straight up had some kind of sex on Facebook Live. Bitch, it got deleted so fast.
Girl.
I was beshrieked.
So she first had a video where she was in somebody's car, and homeboy was like leaned over her and she was like rubbing on his ass.
Oh, and Lord.
And then, and just ass all out, girl. And then I guess the next video.
The next video was her laid back in a bed, the dude straddling him.
Oh, straddling her face, girl.
Straddling her face, and she was sucking him, and it was kind of hot, I admit.
I was convinced
that it was Lexi Shimmers, but I was like, oh no. I was like, this is just too much. Lexi, you've just gone too far now, bitch. So of course I had to screen cap it. You know, I'm like, I need to see this later. The guy had a hot ass. I'm not going to lie. Look at that.
Oh my God. You got a That's a whole different picture than the one I saw.
That's Lexi down there.
Jesus, girl.
Come on, balls all on her, slapping all on her chin again.
Yes.
Like Gone with the Wind again. Got my balls slapping on your chin again. For longer than Gone with the Wind again. Then again. Balls slapping on my chin again like Gone with the Wind again.
Oh, my God, Lexi.
Oh, my God. People were... Meanwhile, I went over there and I said, OMG! And then Sergio, who is like one of her avid followers...
Uh-huh.
Is like, I was expecting you anytime, Miss PDM. Because he knows I'm always scandalized by that whore. Anyway, girl, that is a whole nother story. Bitch, you've taken your sluttiness to an all new heights. Girl, you're lucky you don't get locked into Facebook jail, bitch.
Right.
For that kind of stuff. Any who's it's. We asked for scandalous whores last weekend, and we are getting a scandalous whore this week. So please be prepared for our next guest. Girl, she's been all over the fucking world in just one weekend, it feels like.
Well, I mean, with this one, of course.
Hello?
Roma!
Hi!
Everybody, welcome to Party Foul Radio, Sister Roma!
Woo!
You sound so thrilled.
Girl, maybe she's just tired because your weekend had you everywhere, bitch.
Honey, I'm telling you, I was in Chicago for IML and the Grabbies, came home for a few days, and then headed off to D.C. for the Equality March and D.C. Pride.
Oh my God. You were just like, so first of all, how were the Grabby Awards? I know that I saw you there in a photo with Trenica Rex at one point, not at the Grabbies, but in Boys Town.
I fucking love her. She is such a riot. Do you know her?
I don't know her personally. Of course, I've like seen a lot about her on social media and things like that, but I don't know Trenica personally.
She is so funny. You would totally dig her humor because she's very dry. She says exactly what's on her mind. She gives zero, you know. She's really...
You can say fucks, Roma. You can say fucks. We're a podcast, not a radio show. So.
Oh, okay, because I just did one other thing, and I accidentally swore, and they were like, oh, maybe it was that stupid Fernando and Greg podcast with that Heclina does.
Ugh. Oh, God.
Wait, what?
That thing. Well, I think I may have said swore on that, and you would have thought I was going to get them kicked off the air, and that they'd lose their homes, and their, you know.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, girls.
Well, honey, I'm, you know, I'll reserve my comments about all of that, all of the above.
Oh.
So
you will. Why? You never do.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't need to go back into that situation. I honestly just don't feel it's worth my time. So.
Oh, well, okay. I'm sure the listeners would love to hear.
Well, the listeners can figure out the fact that I don't think it's worth my time speaks volumes. So. But. Yeah. Well, you can swear with us. So you said she's funny. She doesn't give zero fucks.
Right, yeah, no, she's really cool. She's awesome on Snapchat, too. I mean, she is winning the Snapchat. You and... I think I told you last time we talked that Pearl and Trenica were, like, my two favorite people to watch on Snapchat.
That's such an interesting name, Trenica.
You have your own reality show going, like, 24/7 on that shit.
I do. It's kind of a habit. I got addicted as soon as I started.
Yeah,
and you still have to take me to that Vietnamese place.
You mean the Korean barbecue place?
Yeah, the Korean barbecue. Yes,
girl. I'm down, girl. You know, we should really do it.
So, then, what were the Grabbies like?
They're great. You know, it's one of the places where all the people in the adult industry get together every year. It happens in Chicago on Memorial Day weekend, so it's become a real sort of, like... family affair for a lot of us. We're always there. We host parties. It's really the best time to be in Chicago. And Naked Sword won Best Movie of the Year for Secrets and Lies. And Jackie Beat won for Screenplay for our movie Scared Stiff. And Rocco Steele won Best Actor for Secrets and Lies. So and Tim Valenti, our president, got inducted into the Grabbies Wall of Fame this year. So it was a big year for us.
Wow, that's incredible. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So yeah, I remember hearing about the Scared Stiff movie and all of that and like how it took kind of years to come about or whatever. So
Right, yeah. Jackie Beat had written it and given it to Shishi like 15 years ago, and it's a takeoff on the 80s horror movie genre. It's really good. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, Shishi was telling us all about it. She was like, oh, I've had this movie for years. And then she finally got around to directing it.
Yeah, so she was really glad.
So, and
tell us about Pride, though. I want to hear about DC Pride.
Well, hold on. I just wanted to say that, like, you mentioned that this is that Memorial Day weekend is the best time to be in Chicago, and I would imagine so with both IML and the Grabbies there. It sounds like, I mean, I know all of, like, so many of my amazingly fun friends go out there every single year for IML, and
it's the perfect time of year to go because it's not too hot still. The summer has right. been where you just want to freaking die because it's so hot. And it's everybody's sort of coming out of their shell. Memorial Day is the first holiday of the summer. It's just a really fun time to be there. And yeah, it's very gay. Very, very gay.
Well, I'm really excited because our friend here of the podcast, Jeff Millard, placed first runner up at IML. So once again, Jeff, congratulations. He's such a well-spoken advocate for our community here in the Bay Area and beyond. I'm so, so happy for him.
He is excellent. I was lucky enough to be there for that. It was also Lenny Broberg's 25th anniversary of being winning International Mr. Leather, and he is the MC every year. So I got to go there for that and then see Mr. San Francisco be the first, as he was first runner-up, actually.
Yes, so very exciting. So
a lot of the men in that contest, a lot of the people in that contest are amazing people in the community. They do all kinds of great work.
Absolutely. So much, much respect for them. So now, Pearl wants to know about what DC Pride was like, girl.
DC is on fire. It's so awesome, first of all, to be there in the nation's capital where all of the important decisions are made, where the political, no matter which side of the political spectrum you're on, it's still cool to be there. And I felt like I really had to go because I'm so pissed off about Trump and in this awful situation that our country's in right now. There's no way I could not go and just be heard and make a voice. And it was a huge, huge procession to the fairgrounds. The Equality March was amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that Pride and the Equality March and the Resist March, all of those things drew invariably far more than his inauguration did, so.
Way, way more. I have more followers on Twitter than he had at his inauguration.
Oh, my
please.
God.
It's so, but, you know, now because of that, all that whole mess, they have told the Parks and Recreation that they can no longer provide estimates of numbers of attendees of public events. So they wanted us all to register for the Equality March so that they would have some kind of record as to how many people there were, because they're forbidden now from making estimates or projections about how many people attended public events.
Of course they are. In general, nobody else cares except for him because he has no ability to falsify that information. If it's collected, it's absurd.
Ugh.
The whole thing is absurd. But
it really is.
I saw that you were there with Shantae, your BFF, and BB Sweetbriar as well.
Yeah, it was awesome to have those two there. There was a lot of really great people there. So many people from San Francisco showed up, and people from all over the world came. DC is crazy. I mean, I could not believe how packed every bar, every club, every restaurant was. It was just alive with people. And I was fortunate. I got to see a private tour of the Senate. I have my friend of mine, Mike, is the sergeant of arms. So he is in charge of the operations of the Senate building. So he got me and Tim and a bunch of us a private tour. And that was really interesting, too.
Wow. So what is a private tour like of the Senate?
Well, if you go, anybody can go to the Capitol or the Senate building, but you have to have, before anybody could just kind of walk in and look around, but now, at the current administration, again, you have to have an official tour guide. You can't go anywhere without a tour guide, but it involves a lot of pre-registration, waiting in line, going with huge groups of people, 20, 30, 40 people, sometimes they wear headsets, and it's a struggle to see things and be heard. But when you have a private tour, you get to go to your friend's office and see the lower levels of the actual Capitol building where all the offices are and stuff, and then he takes you directly to someone else who takes you past all of the madness and the nonsense. And we had a group of eight of us and this one tour guide named Brandon, who was amazing, and he took us to places where that were closed to public tours, like smaller places we went. We saw where George Washington was supposed to be buried. We found out that there is actually a hair salon in the Senate, in the Capitol building, that is open for senators and the staff. They can get their hair cut. Like, I know they do hair care. They provided that service for like 50 years. Just all sorts of interesting, different aspects of it. And then he knows everything about every statue and every brick and every room and every the centuries old history of the building and the area. So it was cool.
Yeah, and like all of that in the midst of Pride sounds really exciting too. So
yeah, it was great.
So,
but
oh god, there's the but.
Now I'm back, and as we speak I'm sitting here putting together a poster for a big fundraiser that I'm working on that I'm really excited about. Do you remember, I don't know if you remember when the sisters went to Shanghai Pride in 2014?
I remember something about it vaguely.
Yeah, well, it was their sixth annual Shanghai Pride, and an international contingent of sisters were invited to go, and we did a lot of public speaking, and we hosted parties. I hosted a trivia night. It was really an amazing 10-day trip in Shanghai, and the whole thing was documented by our friend Monet Allard, who actually works for ABC7, and she's a filmmaker, and she has finished the movie, and she's taking it to Shanghai Pride to show it there this next week. And then when she comes back, we're doing the U.S. premiere at the Castro Theater on Monday, August 7th, and the movie's called Stilettos for Shanghai, and the event is called Stilettos for Shanghai for Chechnya. So we're doing a big fundraiser for Rainbow Railroad and Orem, two organizations that help refugees, and specifically Rainbow Railroad, which helps get people out of Chechnya. So this is one of the best ways for people to get really involved and be actively help people who are being persecuted in Chechnya, Russia. So we're super excited about this event.
Oh my god. Meanwhile, I'm really white trash because I thought it was Chechnya. So
I guess it is. I don't know how to say it. I think you're right. I think it is Chechnya.
Oh, well, haha. Guess I'm not as trash as I thought. Well, forget it. Let's
you
just.
Are.
Yeah, I am. Really. Thank you.
Don't worry. No, it's Chechnya. You're right. So it's for Shanghai for Chechnya. And it's Monday, August 7th at 6 p.m. We're going to do a VIP reception. We're going to do all kinds of different tier level pricing so people can come, and we want everybody to be able to see this movie because it's really touches on the plight of LGBTQ people around the globe, and then it ties it all into China, and then it shows our trip there and the different places that we spoke to and gets reactions from people all over Shanghai. It's a really cool movie, and it'll leave you feeling pretty uplifted, and plus you'll know that you donated money to save people's lives. So it's going to be a spectacular event. I'm working on the poster as we speak.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, that's fantastic. I was in Taiwan for their pride last year, and now that they've finally passed and legalized gay marriage, I really kind of almost want to go back again this year to see how the country is changing even in just 1 year. You know what I mean? It's like to really see how that has impacted them there. So
yeah, it's so interesting. It's there are a lot of people who need our help around the planet. There's still 500 million people who live, they estimate, who live in persecution and in jeopardy just for being LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would think that more than 500 million, I guess that might be the percentage that they consider to be LGBTQ, but, like, wow.
Yeah.
Rama, how many prides do you go to a year?
Oh, well, not, you know, not too many, really, honestly. I mean, I'm doing, this year again, I'll be the MC on the main stage all day Saturday with Honey Mahogany. And they decided to make Saturday dedicated to all local San Francisco talent. So it's going to be local bands, local performers, local drag queens, speakers, public speakers. It's going to be super cool to have a whole day dedicated to the rich plethora of talent and activism that our city has to offer. So I try to do our Pride every year, and we're all go to New York. But, you know, unless I've been to Prague Pride, I've been to Shanghai Pride, I've done just a few others, but I really I'm not like a Pride circuit queen, because I'm not, like, I haven't been on TV, I'm not a DJ, nobody really, I don't do anything, you know, so I mean, like, I don't really have any reason to go to all these places.
Well, I mean...
Well, you happen to be at all of these places.
Yeah, you do seem to be at a lot of them.
For somebody who doesn't do anything, girl.
Well, I mean, and it's, you know, it's interesting because...
I'm very honored every time somebody asks me, but I'm very clear to make sure they understand that I really don't do anything. They're like, oh, it's okay, come anyway.
Well, I mean, at least you're, like, being honest about it. Imagine all the people that they pay to go to these places who they think they do something, and when they get there, they discover they don't do anything at all.
So. how much do you think I should take my waist in on this poster?
By 50%.
50%?
If you take it in 50%, it'll make you look like you have a waist.
Oh, the face has been fully retouched. You won't even recognize me. You'll just know because there's a boa somewhere around my head.
How sickening, man.
Now, you know, we of course have not done our recap of the most recent episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, and it seems only appropriate that we do it with you on the air with us.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Like,
wow. So what do you think of this season in general? Because we haven't really talked about it that much.
Well, really quick, spoiler alert to everyone who has not seen this episode.
Yeah,
we're about to get into it, girl.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the... We're going to do an overview of the whole season, and then we are going to talk about the most recent episode.
I will say that this season has had, like, the best untucked out of all of them.
I haven't watched a single Untucked, mind you. Pearl watches every Untucked.
Untucked is really good. I liked it a lot when it was on TV. I thought, oh, now I'm really getting to see these girls, and I like the format. It was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then they made it online, and I kind of was like, I don't want to watch it online.
Exactly, me too.
But now I am. I got back into it, and I agree. I do love it again, and it feels more authentic, and
right.
It's just really super cash, and a lot of good things come out. I did not watch The Untucked after this episode, though.
Oh, girl.
So, Pearl really likes The Untucked. It seems that's where all of the, like, good drama and shit goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you sort of learn more about...
These girls.
About the girls, and there's something about each one of them that will touch you, because during the show, I was like, ugh. At first, I thought Trinity was such a bitch.
She's everything.
She's a peasant girl. I didn't like her at all. And then the more I started to watch it, I was like, okay, she's funny. And she's really the only one who's her and Peppermint are sort of the only ones who are giving any kind of digs or dish. Really, you know, that makes it fun.
Yeah.
That seems really honest. The other ones were all like, I was like, well, it really is RuPaul's best friend's race this season. It was almost kind of boring. And I was just so tired of Alexis Michelle, and she had so many chances, girl.
Yes.
I was like, really? Her Liza was not that great. She just, her perception of the way that she was coming across, I mean, she thought everybody loved her, and she thought she was just great, you know, and it was like, girl, no. your fashion is basic, your talent is mediocre, and I'm sure she's, and I feel, listen, I don't know her. I've heard she's very, very nice. I'm only commenting on what I saw on TV.
Right.
I'm really not talking about her as a person, because that wouldn't be fair. But from what I saw on TV, I can only give my opinion.
Right.
But then when you do see things about some of them on Untucked, then you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Oh, now I like them. And that's sort of what happened with Trinity. Then I started following her on Twitter, and I was like, oh my gosh, she's so fun.
Girl, I just started following her on Instagram. Jesus, she's got a few more facial surgeries. She looks beautiful, but she looks younger.
She looks younger?
I don't know what she did, but I definitely want to sign up for it.
Does she have, maybe she had feminization surgery. She's not trans, though, is she?
No, she looks like a boy.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Just really pretty.
She looks like a boy. I'm like, really? I mean, I will say there's a few things that I've really appreciated about this season. So often they cast the girls who are, you know, very much one thing or the other. They cast the pageant girl, they cast the art girl, they cast the whatever. Well, this season, by the challenges, a lot of the challenges alone forced these girls to step outside those comfort zones. And I think that that is something that is beneficial. I think that we've seen a lot of fairly good stuff from people in terms of... My favorite thing that they did all season was the Club Kid. I loved the Club Kid challenge.
Yeah.
I thought that that was...
The runway.
I thought it forced girls to be creative. I thought it forced people to think outside their boxes. I will say that one of the things I appreciate most about Trinity is I do believe that she has grown the most in what she thinks herself capable of, if that makes any sense. Because I think that she went in feeling like, I'm great at pageants, but I probably can't do artistic, or I can't do this, or avant-garde. And I think she really grew in that category. She also probably didn't think she could do funny. And she proved that to be completely false. She's very funny.
Yeah. And she's sexy. And she's...
Yeah.
She's a dirty girl. You know what? Like, in the best way possible. Like, that's... She's, like, my kind of chick. Like, you can see her hanging around with porn stars. You could see her being up all night, carrying on with everybody. You know, she just seems really... real and gritty, and but yet beautiful and polished in her presentation. I like her a lot. So I'm glad that they kept her around.
Yeah, I think that there's so many people at this point that I don't even barely remember who were on the season, you know, which doesn't bode well for them. I will say that, you know, everybody has been talking about, like, wishing that Valentina was still around. But
girl, the drama.
Have you read any of the posts or heard anybody talking about her? Every person that I know who's encountered her at this point, with the exception of two people, has said that she has been a raging bitch and just very, very full of herself.
Well, everybody loved Valentina. Everybody was just immediately was like, oh my gosh, she's beautiful. She's this, she's that. People, including myself, thought,
of course,
top three, like, done deal, nailing it. Everybody loved her, but nobody loved her as much as she loved herself. And she was so sure that she had it in the bag and the judges that she went into that challenge without any rehearsal. They didn't write a script. They thought they could just wing it. And she even said in the episode, she said to Nina, she goes, oh, well, don't worry. The judges love us personally, and we'll be able to pull this off, and we'll be fine. And sure enough, it wasn't good enough. It wasn't polished. It wasn't great. And then to go into the lip sync and not know the words and try and keep that thing on her face.
Girl.
Literally right. The most gag-worthy moment probably in Drag Race history.
Right. Well, and I think...
I was just looking at it going, are you kidding me? And part of me was like, are they going to stop and make her take it off? And the other part of me was like, they better not stop and make her take it off, and she better not, like, win, you know? Because, right. Like, if she kept it on, I would have been like, okay, well, you're out because you didn't do the challenge. But then Rue did stop, and then it proved that she didn't know the words. I mean, that just, everybody was so shook. It was fabulous TV, right?
It really was.
And I also think that
you are right, though, because I know people who worked on the set, including a very good friend of mine who did makeup on the set, and most of the crew members said that she was not a pleasant person to work with. Well, and she was at DragCon, and she walked through DragCon with a crown on, being carried on and in by some guys. Like, people assumed that she had won. Just by the way she was acting at DragCon.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I think that after a little while, initially I really liked, you know, I was intrigued by her. I wasn't sold immediately like everybody else might have been. But over a few challenges, I was like, okay, this girl really has the goods. And then I just started listening to my gut instinct, which was how fake she came across in a lot of those... The confessional interviews came across as very fake. You know what I mean?
Very fake.
Like
that. Because of the viewing party that Honey and I do at Oasis, I decided to play devil's advocate just because I like to fuck with people and it's fun. So I immediately took the stance that I didn't like her. But but secretly, I was convinced she was going to be top three, and I thought she was super beautiful. And like you, I also thought she probably has what it takes. But her insincerity was something that really bothered me. I'm not a fan of the queens who have these distinct personalities, their characters, like little James...
Mansfield.
James Mansfield.
Who had that wacky little character that was so cute, and she was very sweet, but I didn't know who she was. And I even almost felt that way about Ben Delacreme. Because at the beginning, when she first was on her season, I was like, okay, she's doing Viola Jean Merman. And
right.
I don't know who that person is. And I kept telling her to be real. And then as the season progressed, she dropped some of that. And now I know her, and I know she's an amazing, amazing person and a very talented queen does wonderful shows. And, you know, so I don't like the fake thing either. I don't like character queens as much.
Well, I don't mind a queen that is a character when they're supposed to be a character, but I don't want a queen that's a character when they're not supposed to be a character. Like, I'll give a local example that, like, of somebody who I'm... like, I love and admire and appreciate now, but it took me a very long time. Katya Smirnovskaya.
Katya, yep. Katya Smirnovskaya. Exactly. No, she's a real person and a super talented, beautiful queen with a polished performance character that she has created that's amazing.
Right, but...
I agree.
The first couple of years that I knew Conrad outside of drag or whatever, like, he is so into that character, the moment he shows up for an event in drag... he's constantly talking to you with a Russian accent. He's kind of like, I'm like, we're in the dressing room and I'm asking him questions. And he's like, well, darling, I don't know. And I'm like, what in the hell? You know, like, what is going on? Just, I asked you a fucking question. Just answer me.
Right.
It became like, who are you when you're not this? I mean, on stage, of course, like, you're a character and be your character. But we saw that with Katya on Drag Race. Like, she does this really polished Russian character, but she is not that character all the time, lest nobody would have been bonded to her the way that they did, because they bonded to who she is behind the character.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and she really is also a character, just like Alyssa or Lady Bunny. I mean, they are... genuinely, or Tammy Brown, like, those girls are not playing. They are...
that's who they are, girl.
See, like, for real.
Yeah. Like...
you know?
The best kind of weirdo. You know, like, that...
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that thing. I think that... I definitely think that there are people that we know who are probably 90% of the time who we think they are on stage. And that's just here in our personal life. You know what I mean? Like... who they are on stage is pretty much who they are. And then there's the other 10% where they get to be human or whatever. And so now when it comes down, you guys bringing it more current after our recap of the whole season, basically.
Back to this episode.
So it comes down to this final four. They go in. What was the challenge?
It was the write your own verse for one of Ruth's songs.
Oh, yes. Write your own rap verse.
And then learn the choreography with Todrick Hall. Which I thought was amazing. I thought it turned out better than Riju Wrote that she did with Roxy Katya.
That was terrible. Riju Wrote You?
Yeah.
Didn't like it. So.
Well, I mean, it was okay. I think Roxy is kind of what killed that for me. But this one, Runway, was amazing. I really liked it.
Well,
I thought it was impossible to pick who was the best one out of the four.
Well, so did the judges.
Well, I mean, so in terms of the rap and the lip sync, like the rap and their lip sync to their own portion of the song, who did you like, Roma?
I think Shay is really good.
Yeah,
She seems really to be an all around girl and talented and pretty good at everything, and she has a unique look, and she's very sweet. I like her a lot, and I think that Peppermint did a great job.
Yeah.
I felt like, in terms of the rap portion itself exclusively, I thought Trinity that was like a boner killer for her performance of that was just bad. I thought the actual, you know, dance portion and the performance
she
portion
had the best dance portion
was really good. I thought that Sasha did really extremely well. I personally thought that Sasha's overall presentation for that was probably my favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought she was definitely my least favorite out of them, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then we come to the runway, and then what were your thoughts on their runway looks?
Oh, my God. I fell in love with Trinity's dress, bitch. Did you get into that dress? That dress was...
Yeah, Michelle gagged over the look, too.
Oh, that dress.
I don't even remember it.
It had, like, the gold chain in the back. It was black and gold.
Oh, yes.
And it had the, like, nude illusion little side swoop. I death drop.
Oh, you know I live.
Girl, I need a dress like that.
Well,
it was beautiful.
I actually, if I'm 100% honest, I told my friends that I was watching with as a pageant queen who probably has a ton of gowns to choose from, why did she choose that one? I did not like it.
I lived for it, girl. It's probably not the best dress she has in her closet, but Jesus.
Yeah.
I thought it was very vintage. She looked like a vintage Hollywood glamour puss.
Right.
Like an Arte drawing or something.
Right. The only thing I didn't like was her hair. I thought her hair could have been something else.
Well, I think that she probably wore something that was a little... quote unquote avant-garde as hair so that she didn't just look like a normal pageant queen in an evening gown presentation portion.
Yeah. To be honest, I almost don't even remember what the other girls wore.
All I can say, except
for Peppermint's. I didn't like Peppermint's.
Peppermint's was dreadful. Peppermint's gown was dreadful.
She was beautiful from the neck up. Her hair was gorgeous. I lived for her hair.
That hair was insanity. It looked like it was made out of plaster. Shiny, glittery plaster.
It was everything, girl.
I thought her gown was not the tea, and in fact, it was, even for what it was, I thought it was poorly done. Mm-hmm. It, like, if you're gonna have a hoop dress, you're supposed to have multiple hoops, not just one sort of in the middle that just sways around making you look like...
I think it was just, it wasn't good.
It was bad.
Well, I think Peppermint, her aesthetic has been a little...
questionable?
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like she has the biggest budget of all the girls, and I don't feel like she has the most creativity of all the girls.
Right.
I feel like she's been doing this for a very long time, and she knows what works for her body, and she brought some cool stuff, but she's not a fashionista. She's not a glamour. She's beautiful, but she's not an over-the-top, like, wow.
Right.
With the costumes.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I'm really optimistic about is that now that she has a budget to support her, you know what I mean? Like, now that she's going to be making cash,
she
can probably get somebody on board to be making her some fierce stuff that will help her along in that capacity.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I can't even...
Like, did Dallas sew for anybody in this season?
I don't think so.
Not that I know of. I
think she's too busy with all the girls who can afford her, probably.
Maybe so.
I can't even remember.
I don't remember Sasha or Shay's.
Right.
I don't. But when they come down, Rue makes them all four lip sync for their life simultaneously, which was new in and of itself.
Right, and it wasn't as messy as I thought it would have been. But
yeah, so I think that ultimately this is the Roma already let the cat out of the bag, listeners. But spoiler alert, and whatnot. All four of them ultimately go on to the finale.
Next episode, yep.
So, and I asked, without giving away anything that you might have heard or not heard, Roma, have you read the spoilers for the finale?
No. I do my best to avoid any kind of news or watch anything early before I see... do an episode because I want to go to the viewing party and host it with fresh eyes and watch it along with everybody else.
Yeah, well.
So I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
Well, we're not going to tell you. We're not going to tell the listeners either, but all I can say is that I think that the influence of having the show move to VH1 is going to be evident because I really believe that My strong belief is that one of the reasons we've seen things done differently this year is because VH1 has probably taken a greater stance in it, and it I think they may want the outcomes to be less subjective based on just sort of RuPaul driving the car. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
I don't know what that means.
Girl, just buckle your seatbelts because it's going to be one hell of an episode.
Buckle your fucking seatbelt. They, of course, you guys, listeners, they have not crowned a winner yet, but... They have thrown you some twists and turns along the way, and bitch,
it's not
that's
over.
The thing. No, this has not been predictable in any way. I have to say, this season has been very unpredictable. There have been injuries, shocking eliminations, questionable lip syncs. I mean, it's been one sort of shakeup after another. So,
right.
God only knows. God only knows.
And bitch, I'm telling you right now, this is. The finale is going to be everything they need to get people juiced for next year.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, I really wouldn't be upset if any one of them won.
Right.
To
at
be
this
honest.
Point,
like,
at
I
this
can,
point,
I
right.
I do honestly see something in every one of them that I like.
Girl, did
and
anybody
I'm not
else?
Super in love with any one of them in particular either.
That is actually how I feel. Like, last week on the show, Pearl was like, trying to force me to pick a favorite or whatever going into the finale or whatever. And I said, I did have my top three chosen, but I like all of them, but I'm not obsessed with any one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Pearl is much more in love with Trinity and this and that, and that's fine. And I'm sure that there are people out there like that. But for me, the fact that I do not have blinders on because I'm so in love with any one of them allows me to be like, you know what? Any of these four girls could win, and I would probably be okay with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah, but I don't see a Jinx or an Alaska or a Sharon or a Bianca.
Right.
Or even a Willem or a Detox or an Alyssa or a Shangela. I don't see a girl that I consider on that level, really.
Yeah.
And this season, which is sort of sad.
Well, I think that... Yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of being all... If we just take this as a singular type of competition, and, you know, people probably could have buy-in into any one of them. But what I think that you're pointing out is the fact that many times seasons have produced superstars who didn't even, you know... get near the crown sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of how friggin' memorable they were or how hilarious or even how bitchy. You know what I mean? There's not even like a grade A bitch on this season.
Right.
So
right.
There's no Fifi O'Hara. There's no
Roxy Andrews.
Right. You know, but I feel like they're all sort of like Alexis Mateo, Mimi I'm First.
I've compared,
you know, the middle girls, you know, like they're all just sort of, they're all okay, you know. I think Nina Brown was maybe one of the most interesting ones, but she was such a sad sack and her own worst enemy that it was like, girl, fine, we're not going to give it to you then. We'll just send you home. You know, she was so unhappy. And right. I hope that Eureka comes back and she was starting to be... Really, I was like, whoa, that Eureka, she's a bitch, right? Because she was so catty to the girls in the workroom, but at least she was entertaining and fun to watch, but she hurt herself, so they had her go home, remember that?
Of course. Yeah. Well, you know...
So she's coming back, I guess, for season 10.
Nina Bonina Brown is the only situation we've ever encountered, and I've already talked about this at length, where the person who was my preseason favorite... became the person I was rooting for to go home the most. I love the creativity of her mind. I hate the negativity of her talk, and I can't deal with it. It's, you know, like, just shut up and show me the art. Like, just, she's the kind of person I would just, like, the only thing I would want to see from her is Instagram. Just show me the fucking picture. I don't want to have to hear a single word that you've had to say about it. Just show me when it's done and be done.
Right.
I can't take that shit. And I was like, you're all out to get me. Why, bitch? Nobody even knows you.
Right.
They're all rallying around you trying to pick up your spirits. And that's the way you think that's how they're out to get you.
Right.
We're really going to get you by making you not unhappy all the time. And that will ruin you.
Mm-hmm.
Girl, shut up.
But girl, back to this episode. Did anybody else almost cry when, like, Peppermint was talking, like, to her previous self?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah, I
was almost in tears, bitch.
Well, I mean, one would imagine so. It's like, it speaks more to you than maybe it might to others.
I think that could have made anybody cry.
Well, I mean, it was extremely touching. One of the things I also remember this episode is they asked why they should win more than the others.
Yes, and nobody answered it except for maybe Trinity, but she went on...
Oh, girl, Trinity shot herself in the foot as far as I was concerned. No, you don't deserve... I deserve it. No, you don't, bitch. You don't deserve it any more than anybody else. She's like, I've been through something... Everybody's been through something, girl. There is nobody out there who hasn't been through something. If they have, like, please show yourself. And that way, everybody who's been through some shit can beat your ass.
Right.
Well, now this Friday is the reunion show. That's when they're going to bring everybody together. And, I mean, who knows what exactly is going to happen, because VH1 has been very cryptic about their scheduling and the exact descriptions of what goes on each show. But as I understand it, it's the reunion show.
It is.
So and lost unseen footage. So maybe more will be revealed. Maybe we'll probably end up feeling more, having more feelings for some of these girls, because maybe they'll show us some things that'll make us love them more, and maybe some things that'll make us dislike them more. But the tea will come out when you join me at Oasis to carry on this conversation, Poyo.
Yes, indeed. You guys, the beautiful, talented, and ridiculously sweet and kind Honey Mahogany is not available to co-host her viewing party with Sister Roma this Friday evening at Oasis. So Roma turned to the only other person she knows who is so kind, so gracious, so sweet,
oh my God,
so
Roma,
giving.
How could you?
She asked me, you guys.
How could
you?
Yeah,
their personalities are so similar. It's crazy.
I frequently get mistaken for Honey Mahogany all the time.
I would have thought you would have got confused for Roma before Honey Mahogany, bitch.
Oh. What is she saying about you, Roma? She's saying some evil shit about you.
Who?
No,
Pearl, she just said that...
I'm just saying that Poyo looks more like a clown than Honey Mahogany.
She just said you look like a clown.
I got that. Okay, Pearl.
No, Roma, don't even try
noted.
It.
Noted.
She not only said that I look more like a clown, she also said that I'm more bitter than Honey Mahogany and more awful. Thusly, she was surprised I didn't get mistaken for Roma more than Honey.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess now we know why I didn't ask Pearl.
Oh, bitch, whatever.
You wanted somebody with a personality is what I assumed. Oh, damn.
I do. I want you to bring everything, and I know you will. I know you're going to be really honest, and we'll have a lot of fun up there talking about what some of the things we've talked about tonight, our opinions about the past episodes, and then commentary about what happened. And we also play trivia, and we have drink specials, and we get a really cute crowd. So we're going to have a lot of fun. I'm so glad you're available to do it. I thought for sure that you would not. You'd be busy. But when you said yes, I was so happy. So.
Well, as I told you, like, I love the opportunity to spend time with people I like and enjoy.
Here she goes.
And, well, girl, it's true. Like, you make time for the people that you want to make time for. And that's just the truth in life, mm-hmm. right? So.
Yeah. Like, when we did the makeover, you did my makeover.
Absolutely. Loved
that
it.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. We dig each other. Everybody knows that. It's fine. Don't be bitter, Pearl. You'll find a friend, honey.
Oh, Red. Roma, you know I have real friends.
Oh, God. So, you know, Roma, I'm curious, because one of the things that we talk about a lot here on the podcast is, like, when we talk about Drag Race, or when you are another drag performer or personality, and you talk about these girls on Drag Race, if you don't, like, absolutely love everything somebody does, people are like, you're such a hater, you're whatever. And I'm like, no, I'm not a hater. I just, like, share my feelings about what I've seen on my television. I don't propose to know them or, like, suggest that I know them on any kind of personal level. I'm just responding to what I see on TV. Do you guys, when you give your opinions and stuff, feel like people, like, you know, backlash a little bit?
Well, there are always going to be people in the audience who live for the catty comments, and they want people to make those sort of nasty catty statements, and it's fun to do. We're all just playing. There's a talent. There's an art to shade. And if you're good at it, not like Pheromone, who was just playing mean and uncomfortable. Did you see the tweet that she made? Did we talk about that?
No. What was it? Because she's so pretty, but there's nothing else. There's nobody home.
She's really, really pretty, and I can see why they put her on the show, because she has a huge amount of Instagram followers and Twitter. She's big on Twitter, but her whole thing about how she's a nice person and it's just being reading people would be so hard, and then she came out and she was just blatantly awful about everybody, you know. And then, but she felt so bad about it, and she felt so bad. Well, she made a tweet. She said that she had flown a 10-hour flight to London, and she got off the plane, and she looked so busted that there was a super fan who swore up and down that he knew her from Drag Race. He said, "Are you from RuPaul?" And she said, "No." LOL. He was so sure. I feel bad. And then she tweeted it.
What?
Oh, my God.
So, in other words, there was a fan who was certain that it was her and was all excited, like, "Oh, my God, you're Pheromone." She was like, "No, it's not me. Were you on Drag Race?" "No." And then she went and tweeted about it and laughed about it and said she felt bad for lying to the kid.
You know what? What that says to me is she's just so fucking vain that if she doesn't feel like she looks good, she doesn't want to meet somebody who doesn't fucking care if she looks busted or not. They're just excited to meet her.
I don't know, girl. I'm not trying to meet nobody, you know, if I look busted
and
either.
I get it. I have, over the years, people, they're like, "Okay, well, we're going to put you on this poster." I'm like, "Okay." And then I'll turn around and I'll look at it like, "Oh my God, they chose that picture." I mean, there are times when you don't want to be noticed. You don't want to be recognized. You're doing things of where you would rather have nobody know who you are. And people are going to recognize you, and that's going to happen. Well, I tweeted her back and I was like, I said, "One time, a long time ago, I came home from the Folsom Street Fair complaining about how everybody wanted photos, and I was so over it. And my friend said to me, 'You better enjoy it while it lasts, because one day nobody will.'"
Right.
I just tweeted that to her because I was like, "Girl, just keep it. Remember that. This is fleeting. This is momentary. This is what you wanted. You should enjoy it. You should appreciate it and respect those people. And you know, it just be kind and certainly don't lie to your fans."
And then LOL about it on the social media. They know they're going to see.
And it won't last for her if she doesn't.
Girl, it's not going to last for her anyway. She, like, you know, she and Kimora, like, she and Kimora both are the equivalent of a beautiful model home. It is, like, gorgeous on the outside, but, honey, nobody's there. It's vacant. Like,
that's what it seemed like. I hope it's not true. The only interaction I've had with her is when I helped her with her name on Facebook, and she was very grateful and appreciative. And I'm not saying that she's an evil person. I'm just saying that I hope she learns that lesson early on, because it took me a while to learn it, and it really changed my life. I really have. I mean, that's where the tagline, "The most photographed nun in the world," comes from, because after that day, from that day forward, I've flatly refused to ever say no to anybody who wanted a photo. And that's the truth. Everybody know, you know that. You've seen me out in public, and I have friends who won't walk with me because they're like, "Oh God, she's going to stop and take pictures with everybody who asks." And I'm like, "Yes, I am, you know, because I'm flattered and they want a picture. So what am I going to say? No?" Like,
the only time I turn down requests for photos, I will say, they'll ask, "Can I get a photo?" And I'll say, "We're going to use a flash, right?" And if they say, "We don't need a flash," I say, "Then I don't need the photo." Because, like, I'm more than happy to do it, but don't do something that you know is going to be unflattering. Jesus, just give us...
And do what with it? Like, a dark photo, you can barely see us at all. It's just grainy and dark, and, like, what? What's the point? Most of the time, I will say, "Can you use a flash?" Or I'll let them take it, and I'll look at it, and I'll be like, "No, we need to do one with a flash." And then they'll be like, "Oh." And then they'll turn around and they'll go, "Oh, it's so much better." You know, but sometimes I don't have the time or the patience to deal with that, so I'll just let it slide, you know. But, yeah, I agree. That should be rule number one. Use a flash. Everybody listening, if you want to take a picture with a drag queen, put the flash on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Roma, I will see you on Friday.
Yes, I can't wait.
And Pearl, do you want to insult her one last time before we let her go?
It's been fabulous. We'll see each other on Snapchat, boo.
Go ahead, Pearl. Don't forget. Say something about my age or something. I mean, you might as well. Go ahead.
You did it for me, boo.
Girl, you're so old. That's her thing. She tells me all.
Didn't she?
Huh?
She won that pageant, didn't she?
Which one?
Oh, did you win multiple pageants?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, well, see, that's what it is. That's why she's got a huge head. Oh,
girl, shut it down. I just passed a crown. I didn't compete again.
She just passed a crown, and God, does her ass hurt. Ow! Oh, my... Oh, my God. Anyway, Roma, we love you. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you later, honey.
Okay, bye, girl.
Bye. Y'all, sometimes I crack myself up, bitch. She passed a crown. Oh, God, that was a good one. All right,
anyway,
you guys.
Girl.
That was the amazing Sister Roma. Find her at Sister Roma on all social media. Just look her up. She's the most photographed nun in the world.
I'm sure you could just Google that bitch and she'll come up.
She sure will, all over. Anyway, this is Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We're going to take a quick break.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with you. Damn.
Thanks. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. For all of your personal lubrication needs, use Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. There's a lube for every hole. Available at all fine retailers near you. Swiss Navy Premium Lube is the preferred lubricant of Party Foul Radio. All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
And I don't know, Pearl, did you happen to see on Facebook that I released a promo? I cut my first wrestling promo, you guys. On June 23rd, I will be back with Wrestling for Charity in Santa Clara, California at the Mission City Mayhem event. It's the Mission City Cup Tournament, the 5th annual, and I will be standing in for my buddy Donovan Troy as the acting general manager of Wrestling for Charity. Did you see the promo that I cut?
No.
Oh, my God.
I'm just kidding. I did. Girl, did you just take a shit and not close that door? What is that? Girl, or did you just pass gas?
Oh, my God. Not on the air, Pearl. I pooped. Hold, please.
Disgusting, girl. Where's your dignity? Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. But I don't want to smell like that perfume. Oh, it actually smells really good. What is that?
It does. I don't know. I had to spray some perfume. Oh, God, how embarrassing, Pearl. Jesus, I passed a crown too, bitch.
That was a fast one. You guys should see. If you're on my Snapchat, you know. But they usually take forever.
Anyway, so, did you see? I don't know what it is. Cookie Dough and I found it years ago.
It looks like a knockoff of...
We'll get back to the wrestling thing, but Cookie Dough and I, years ago, Craigslist, like, things that were, like, for sale or whatever. Uh-huh. And so Cookie had found that this spa in, like, over in Russian Hill or Cathedral Hill or Laurel Heights or one of the really nice areas of San Francisco was closing down. And they were, like, getting rid of everything. And so she and I went over and they had put out all these robes and all these... like aromatherapy things and all these fragrances. And this was one of the fragrances that Cookie and I collected a number of years ago. And now, you guys, I just use it mostly for when
she takes a shit.
Oh,
girl, it still smells.
Oh my God. What? Anyway, you guys, this is so humiliating. Anyway, so
Jesus.
Pearl, did you see
I saw it. It looked hilarious. And I saw the response you got, too.
Oh, my God. So, I cut my very first wrestling promo, and I was rather pleased by it. Like,
did you get, like, your own theme song and everything?
I will. I'm going to have to come up with a theme song, and...
You can use How Embarrassing.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Maybe I'll use my I'd Rule the World song. If I had a pussy, if I had a pussy, if I had a pussy, I'd rule the world. So, anyway, I'll be back with Wrestling for Charity, and there's all kinds of... I got... so many storylines jumping off. In wrestling, you guys, they're called angles. I've got numerous angles jumping off. Of course, my ongoing feud with Kikyo the Fallen Flower is going to be transpiring there. Her former manager, the Cold One AC, and I have got a storyline that's brewing. And it's been hinted that I might have a special relationship brewing with...
Oh, my God.
With Julio Pedroza, who won the over-the-top Battle Royal with, when we were at the Santa Clara Sports Expo.
Oh, my God.
After I smacked him on his ass and helped him to victory.
So you're putting out in Pollo now?
Girl, I'm not, but Julio Pedroza is so fine, I might think about it. That he's so hot, and he's so sweet.
Girl, these clown fuckers are scary.
Yeah, well, I know, but... Some girls live by it. I don't have to. I don't. Of course, right. I'm practically a born again virgin. I've never had sex and drag, so I don't really think about all that. So the clown fuckery, though. Some girls, that's their cup of tea. Excuse me, not my cup of tea at all.
We'll see. Anyway,
so. Anyway, that is coming. If you're in the Bay Area and you are a professional wrestling fan, it's Friday, June 23rd. That is the Friday before Pride. It's going to lead me up to a very busy Pride weekend.
I will be on the Barry Harris gay sunset cruise.
Damn, I wanted to go on that, and I forgot that it was that night, so I'm glad that I didn't get my ticket. Because I did want to go on that. Shit.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
It literally, last year, was the best part of Pride.
So, that is being produced... by our friend Brian Kent, mm-hmm. who produces that with DJ Barry Harris, one half of the Grammy-winning group Thunderpuss, of course. Oh, currently, I want to point out to you guys, we've put up some really popular stories over the years. You know, we've done interviews here that I write up for the Huffington Post. If you want to read my contributions to Huffington Post, it's super simple. Google Pollo Del Mar Huff Post, and it'll pull up my author sheet there. And you can read dozens and dozens from my fiction series, Life by the Bay, which is now in its 16th installment, to our celebrity interviews, most of which have been conducted here on the podcast. But that Stan Zimmerman interview that we put up last week about the possibility of a gay men's Golden Girls has gotten so many views on the site, because I think, of course, everybody loves Golden Girls and, you know, gay men and... women especially love Golden Girls. So it's gotten a lot of eyes on that and a lot of ears on the podcast. We had over 7,000 listeners last week, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Sickening.
So thank you to all the people around the world. And we mean around the world, girl, because we had 1,300 listeners in Kenya, bitch.
Come on, Kenya.
And
not Kenya Michaels.
Not Kenya Michaels. But Kenya, the country in Africa, and Uganda... is also our number three most listened to territory.
I think Somalia is on there, too.
I think it's like... Well, we're going to look it up real quick. I'm going to try to look this up. I think it was Uganda was number three, but Somalia might have been number three. But we had, of course, the majority of our listeners are here in the United States, but African countries rank even above places that you would think we might be popular, like the UK or Australia. Girl, I mean, like, the... those people in Africa are not playing. And I really do want to know why we are so popular there. I mean, I'm not going to look a gift African horse in the mouth. But the fact is that we are extremely popular down there. So let me see if I can find this information for you guys. Boop, 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 boop. Kenya is... okay, so United States is number one for our listener base. Kenya is number two, Somalia is number three, Uganda is number four, Canada is number five, number six is the United Kingdom, Brazil, Australia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Singapore. Those are our top listening categories or areas. I would have never, ever imagined that we would be listened to in any of those fucking countries, except the U.S. and maybe Canada.
I love it.
I mean... girl, who knew that podcasts, I guess, are a very popular thing in Africa, girl. So, you know, I wonder if they ever are like, where do I get Swiss Navy premium personal lubricants? Oh, can you imagine if they're in Uganda and they're like, I really want to get my hair cut at Daddy's barbershop in the Castro.
Right.
They might be able to go to liveleft.com. and check out Left Magazine, or they can go certainly to GuideToGay.com and check out what it's like in Australia. But so we do, of course, we will be getting a new shipment from Ellen Friedman, our hookup at Swiss Navy Premium Lube. So we'll be doing an on-air giveaway. You guys need to listen for more on that. Oh, anyway, Pearl, let's take another quick break and... What?
Nothing.
And when we come back, we are going to have a pre-recorded interview for you guys, so stay tuned for that. Also, I'm going to give us a recap of a recent interview we did with Andy Bell from the group Erasure. Erasure's new album just dropped last week, and it debuted in the top 10 in their home country of the United Kingdom, as well as in the top 10 around in countries throughout Europe. And I listened to that album today, and I wish you guys could understand how amazing some of the music is. There is a song called It Still Isn't Over Yet, and it's about the impact of the AIDS epidemic on the LGBTQ community in the 80s and 90s. And coming from an artist like Andy Bell, who is HIV positive himself, it is really impactful to listen to that particular song. So if you guys get a chance, just go look that up. Andy Bell, Erasure, It Still Isn't Over Yet. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to have another pre-recorded interview, but I'm also going to include some snippets of our Andy Bell interview with for you guys to, because it's relevant and timely now that their album is finally out. We'll have all of that and much more on this episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
We'll be back in a moment. If you're in the Bay Area looking for a haircut, go to Daddy's Barbershop at 4102 19th Street. Voted Best Barbershop in the Bay Area in the San Francisco Bestie Awards 2017. For everything from beard trimming to tight fades, Daddy's Barbershop is your one-stop shop and solution. Go visit Daddy's Barbershop at 4102 19th Street in the Castro, proud sponsors of Party Foul Radio. Be sure to tell them we sent you. All right, everybody, this is Poyo Del Mar, your co-host on Party Foul Radio, and I am back with our fabulous celebrity guest at this time. Now, we drag queens in the world of professional wrestling have to stick together. And I am on the West Coast, the diva extraordinaire at Wrestling for Charity. But our guest at this time is an East Coast wrestling sensation, one half of the Fella Twins. Of course, a play on the famous Bella Twins from the WWE. And he wrestles under the name Ricky Cataldo. You might know him as the Boy Diva. Please welcome the Boy Diva, Ricky Cataldo, at this time to Party Foul Radio, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey, bitch, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Sorry, I've been so busy in MIA.
It's all right, girl. I know you're a busy bitch. So
I'm terribly fucking busy. I need an assistant, girl. Am I a tough girl?
Well, I always see that you are always in a new wrestling match. You're always posting new videos. How often do you actually wrestle?
Maybe at best twice a month.
Well, I mean, that's still, like, a lot by most standards, even, you know. So, right? And the most recent one I saw of you, you were wrestling former TNA Knockout Marty Bell in like, some kind of a bra and panties match or lingerie match.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I wish I can take those days back.
Tell me how that started, how that went down.
The feud with Marty?
Yeah.
Well, Marty, like, is based from the same place I'm based up, Gleason's Gym in New York, Johnny Rods, his wrestling club. And she got into business as a model, like a ballet. And me being me and so concerned with women's wrestling, you know, I kind of pulled this aside. I was like, hey, do you want to do the seriously? And she was like, yeah, of course, I'm a case. So, you know, save some money. I'll come into training and I'll help you out as much as I could. And we formed a tight bond. And some of my best matches are with Marty Bell.
Wow. Of course, she got a good amount of national wrestling exposure when she was with Impact Wrestling. I actually watch her periodically on this Kansas City-based wrestling organization that she's part of, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's
She's doing great things. She's such a charismatic talent. Like, she's great.
Yeah, she's
I think nothing but the world of her.
When you wrestle, by the way, you never take bumps. Bumps, listeners, are like when you get thrown around.
That's my slogan. I don't bump.
Is that just because you're fully trained, right?
Oh, I mean, of course. I've been around for 13 years this summer. I can bump. It's just that, you know, it's almost like a tongue-in-cheek kind of joke. Because I'm such a charismatic diva that, like, you know, especially with this women's revolution, you know, going around, I'm more like of the diva, the charismatic, you know, character-driven gimmicks. Like, I don't have to bump. It's a tongue-in-cheek thing. You know what it is? I think, okay, here's my thing. I think the greatest professional wrestler and the greatest work in the business ever, male or female, is Sable. I think all her matches mattered. I think she's the greatest thing to ever step in the business. I aspire to be Sable. I think everyone in the business should aspire to be Sable. And her big thing was, oh, it was in her contract that she didn't bump. And that's kind of my thing, too. I don't bump.
Are you... Jesus, she...
It's also, like, a fuck you to the indie wrestler now, where everyone's like, you know, flippy, especially with nowadays, everyone's tweeting, like, you know, hashtag diet, hashtag headlock. I'm just hashtag all charisma, storytelling, no bumping.
Yeah, but, I mean, don't you think that taking some falls and doing all those things would add to the story?
If I do bump, it has to matter.
Oh, God. I mean, I can't believe, first of all, that you're going to say that Sable's the best thing to ever happen to wrestling. Jesus.
Sable is the greatest wrestler ever. What are you talking about? She put asses in seats. She's the reason why the women's division came back. No one got popped that she got. She sued for millions, got millions, came back for millions. She's like the Vanna White of wrestling. She can do so little, but it means so much.
God, she's, whatever. Good for her. I mean, I'm assuming that she can...
I mean, think about it. Compared to her peers, the likes of China and Sunny, one's dead, one's in and out of rehab, and then Sable's sitting on her $1 million, you know, mansion with Brock, collecting the paychecks and the, you know, royalties. I aspire to be Sable.
Right.
No bumping.
Well, I mean, one would assume she can take the D for like a champ because, you know, I'm sure that Brock has to. So. Good for you, Sable. You take that D in the back door, the front door, the side door. You take it wherever he wants to fucking put it, girl.
Good Any door.
Any door, exactly. Now, tell us a little bit about the Fella Twins, which, of course, is a play on the Bella Twins. And so tell us about that. I mean, I, of course, had heard about the Fella Twins. And so when you and I connected on Twitter and other social media, I was like, oh, my God, I know of this person. So, but tell the listeners.
So the Fella Twins came about. I mean, it's just a play on names. Like, everyone's like, oh, Fella Twins. Like, you know, we're really not mocking them, or, you know, there's really nothing that we do that's, like, inspired by them. It's just a total play on names. Because for a long time, I was only, you know, openly gay wrestling in the area. And about 3 years ago, you know, the likes of Eddie McQueen and Sonny Kiss came up. And I had actually had an idea that if I ever had, like, someone like me, I would do a tag team like the Fella Twins. Like, it's always been, like, a brainchild of mine. And then once Eddie McQueen came out, you know, I stuck my teeth into him, I linked up with him, I, like, mentored him, and he's my Fella Twins tag team partner. So that's how the origins began.
Yeah, in your area, it seems like the gay wrestling thing is not nearly as uncommon as it appears to be on the West Coast, because you mentioned Sonny Kiss, and we've talked to him before, or I've talked to him before, and then there's the two of you. Like, how uncommon was it when you started?
For 10 years, it was so uncommon. Like, people for the longest time thought, like, I was a straight worker who just got his rocks off wrestling women, and that's, like, the farthest thing from the truth. People thought, like, you know, I shouldn't be in the business because I was really too gay. You know, people, instead of me having spots and bookings, like, you know, a bunch of straight wrestlers, you know, did the Tales all the time thing of they would be the gay novelty act and the gay gimmick act, but I was the real deal out there. So yeah, for a long time it was very uncommon, but now since we're in the, you know, a new day, a new age, it's more common than ever. And it's really crazy for me to see, being that, like, it was only me for a long time, it's for me to sit back and see, like, oh my God, there's so many more popping up, like, cut from the same book I'm cut from. Like, it's amazing. And it's only going to grow from here on out.
Yeah, and the thing that you mentioned sort of is that characters that have been perceived as gay in professional wrestling have not been unheard of. There have been significant numbers of them through the years, but it's never been
somebody... all the way back to Gorgeous George and Ricky Starr, Goldust, and everyone in between and after.
Right, but the thing is, it's always been straight guys playing these characters, because then it's less threatening. I mean, it gets the response that they want from the crowds who perceive them to be gay, but it doesn't threaten the guys in the locker room by actually having somebody who's actually gay in the locker room.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'm wondering what the response has been behind the scenes to you as a worker.
Nowadays or back then?
Let's start with back then.
Back then, it was very question. because it's like, isn't he, what is he in the business for? Why does he only care about women's wrestling? Why does he only wrestle the women? You know, and plus I was so young, like I was 14 when I started. I really, you know, when I burnt out in the indies, I was 16, 17. So, I mean, I myself as a gay man, like, wasn't, you know, I was still a teenager. I was still finding who I was as a person, and wrestling really helped me along. And I had to go through some shit. You know, I really, my name was, well, slandered, you know. I became notorious for a couple of wrong reasons. I was very, when it comes to the business, I was very pigeonholed. I was very, you know, held back from my full potential. But at the same time, I'm to blame because with my psychology and as I, you know, grew up in the business, I thought, like, I had to cater and pander to those needs of, like, what the Goldust did before me and what, like, you know, the Christopher Street Connection was doing before me. I felt like, you know, I had to be that flamboyant, typical, stereotypical type. And then as I found myself as a person, especially when I started doing the drag, like, I really brought something new and fresh and authentic as a gay person, as a gay performer to the table. And now, nowadays, you know, me being a veteran, I look at it as a trailblazer for the LGBT community in wrestling. Like, now it's just, like, a warm response. People kind of understand, or at least want to understand, where I'm coming from.
Right. I mean, I think that my foray into professional wrestling has been so varied over the years, from, you know, going from a fan to writing about it and then being embraced, actually.
Stepping in the ring and being the commissioner. I'm a cat by bed to you, girl.
Yes, I know, right? So, like, you know, but the thing was that I realized, like, when I first walked into, the first time, for example, I walked into a Wrestling for Charity dressing room, I was in drag, of course, and I overheard somebody making a really unpleasant, or what I considered a pretty offensive comment about me. And I was like, you know, I'm right here. I can actually hear you. You can't see me because I'm around a corner, but I heard you. And then it went from that to the next time I was in one of their dressing rooms, everybody was so warm. The person who made the shady comment, by the way, was not there, but everybody was so warm and so accepting, and they were excited to have something new and unusual on the card. They were excited to have a new character. So I think that, you know, the idea of presenting a story that not every company is presenting was exciting to people, you know, if they're in it for the bigger picture, really. So,
right.
I'm sure that you've had some element of response similar to that, like, we're doing something nobody else is doing, which is great for us.
Right. Well, you know what's crazy? I always thought about it as, like, oh my god, don't these people, whether it's my peers or promoters or bookers, sponsors, everyone in between, you would think that they would latch on and make something great out of it. Like, you have this whole completely different element to a show, and, you know, some people, you know, it's a blessing and a burden.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the one thing that I thought was great is that this company that I work with has never spoken about bringing me in as a heel character, as somebody who's not a fan favorite. I've been positioned as an audience favorite from go, which kind of prevents some of the scarier elements of playing the character in a public setting, like, you know, the homophobic responses, the nasty slurs, right. All of those things is, you know, that is eliminated a little bit by being somebody that the fans are intended to root for and support.
Right, definitely. Well, it depends on, like, you know, who you work for, the area. You know, me, like, when I started in the business, it was the Bush administration. It was the time before Lady Gaga. Like, pop culture and, you know, America was different at the time. So I definitely pandered to the hate and the homophobic crowd. And, you know, I was placed as, like, the gimmick gay. You know, I got the X-Pac heat. But, you know, as you said, like, time goes on, and I think I did a good job at reinventing myself time and again, whether I was a wrestler, tag wrestler, a manager, you know, the stereotypical gay wrestler, and now I'm, like, a full-blown drag queen in wrestling. And now I get more of a warm response where even if I'm booked as a heel, I come out and the crowd eats it up and they go crazy and they accept me.
Now, but didn't you find that it was very taxing on you emotionally to walk into, you know, an arena or, you know, whatever space that you're performing in and elicit that kind of hatred? Doesn't it take an emotional toll on you?
I learned very early on to survive in this business, you're going to have tough skin, especially for the person I am or the person I wanted to be, and especially the person I want to be presented as. I mean, sure, it comes with it, but I can't even tell you about it because from an early age, I just ignore the real life negative thoughts people might have or garnish towards me. I just, that's completely not in my brain whatsoever. I mean, sure, I've affected it greatly. I've been blackballed from some places. Again, like I said, I've been pigeonholed most of my career. But I mean, in due time, I really found my foot in it. I found my niche.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, one of the things, you know, ultimately, I have talked to Wrestling for Charity, and I was like, down the road, I want to, I've always loved the heels, I've always loved the bad guys, that's what I would always have imagined myself as. You know, I want the opportunity to do that, and, but the flip side of that is, like, how will I feel when people are calling me a faggot and, you know, all of these hateful things that I know come with that territory if you're a character like you or I, you know?
Right. Well, one thing I learned, like, taught myself a couple years ago that I said to some people, you know, from our community that really has helped them and has helped me first, you know, I always say at the end of the day, it's professional wrestling. Never beat yourself up over it, because at the end of the day, this is a world built on make-believe. So I never want to feel, you know, because it's wrestling. It takes a toll on you physically and emotionally. But you have to remember, at the end of the day, like, it's a land built on, like, you know, ha-has and fairy tales. And, you know, you can't take it too hard that much.
Right.
As long as you're confident in yourself and you know the person you are, then you can, you know, strive through anything.
Right. But I think that one of the things that the wrestling industry is also built on is it's always played to...
blatant homophobia. I mean, let's cut around the corner. Wrestling, since it's all the time, is two Adonis men, you know, rolling around half naked. Like, that's why it's a blessing and burden, and also, like, you know, the belly of the beast being gay in wrestling, because boys will be boys, and it is a boys' club, and it's a very, you know, men-focused, you know, industry. So, like, of course there's, like, a lot of different perceptions. But, you know, as long as you're true to yourself and you know what you want out of this business, like, you got to be tough. Like, you know, you have to be tough again. And at the same time, you have to be tough, but remember, at the end of the day, like, it's all make-believe. You have to get the, you know, it's almost like when Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz found out that there was no great grand Wizard of Oz. It was just a little puny man behind the curtain. You can either get upset, like, when you realize wrestling is just that, you can either get upset over it, or you can laugh with it and be like, okay, now let me see what I can do with it. And that's what I've learned
to explain myself. Right, but one of the things that I think that would play into my mind is that wrestling has always played to social norms and social... I mean, some of the best stories have been kind of like had their finger on the hot button topics of what was happening in the day. I think back to when Sergeant Slaughter, you know, became an Iraqi sympathizer, you know, during the height of the Gulf War. Like, that was one of the most legendary turns in the wrestling industry, and it was because it was playing to people's real life fears. And I think that when you do a story as a gay character, even though it is make-believe, it still speaks to people's real life fears and insecurities in the world today.
Of course.
And so when,
but at the same time, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just gonna say, so when people are saying things, it's not the same as if you're playing a character, for example, that is just sneaky and underhanded and people call you asshole or whatever, you know, because you can go home and be like, well, that's not really who I am. But we're playing characters that are really close to who we actually are in some ways.
Yeah. Close to home. You know, it's not like you're building a personal relationship with the crowd. They're marks for a reason. They paid a ticket for a reason. And sure, you do have that. What you're saying is correct, but at the same time, for example, I can remember what comes to mind right now is, years ago, I was in a love-rejected storyline with a, you know, traditional, cute, Adonis young wrestler, and it was kind of like a boy version of Mickey James interest, you know, kind of going on that territory.
Right.
And, of course, I was the heel. But I remember one time, specifically, I was in a match with him, and the storyline had involved, like, a third party, like his tag partner. And I was facing the tag partner, the kid who I was in storyline mode attracted to was a special guest rep, so he, you know, that was the main point of the story of the match, where, you know, who was he going to, like, you know, favor, his, like, you know, the person he likes him, who he's cool with, the gay wrestler, or his tag partner, who had a problem with me being gay and attracted to his partner. And I remember, specifically in this match, there were young kids in the crowd saying, oh, no, he's doing it for the right reasons, oh, no, he's in love with him, like, it's just little stuff like that. So, yeah, the majority is, you know, of course, you're going to have the haters and the homophobes out there and people who might question. But at the same time, it's like going to a movie. People are going to feel differently of what you're presenting to them.
Right. I mean, I guess that one of the things I would say about this is that the people in the crowd who are going to have that response are the people in the world who would have that response regardless. And there might be people in the, you know, the audience who would see and, like, look into the layers of a storyline and be like, oh, you know, this isn't as bad as it seems. Or, you know, perhaps it could...
I mean, that's example. Look at the amazing WrestleMania 22 match with Mickie James and Trish. People ate Mickie up. Like, they, even though she was a psychotic lesbian who was, like, you know, well, like, you know, doing all that, like, you know, crazy shit with Trish Stratus, people were so entertained by her and they related to her in some way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even though, like, it, you know, there's different crowds and there's different people that are going to perceive wrestling as different things. And it's a blessing and a burden, like, I go back to, because... You know, as much as I would love to, when I perform nowadays, I would love to have kids in the crowd, you know, look up to me in some ways. I know that, like, you know, there might be some parents, and that's a burden thing. You know, it depends on the crowd. Like, for example, what I'm trying to get at is, like, you know, there's a lot of places I can't wrestle because the family went to the crowd, and they're worried of what I would do or how the crowd would respond. Or there's a lot of VFWs I'm not allowed to because, you know, it's even though it's 2017, it's still like, oh, we don't want to upset this community or just, you know, home base. So, I mean, there's so many things that go into it.
So, how is it, like, which companies do you wrestle with and for most consistently?
Prominently, I am from the East Coast, and the two promotions that you'll always see me at is NYWC, based out of Long Island, New York, and Women's Superstars Uncensored, which I have been a mainstay for, like, most of my life.
I think it's hilarious that you are a mainstay at Women's Superstars Uncensored.
Well, you know what? I got into this because of women's wrestling. Like, I felt like I'm not knocking guy wrestlers, but, like, it's because of the women of the 90s that I fell in love with wrestling and I wanted to be a wrestler. Like, they're just, like, my childhood heroes in every sense. And that's why I'm called the boy diva, you know? Like, my whole life is based off what a diva during that era would do.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's pretty hilarious. And I applaud wrestling companies that recognize that wrestling is quite often just about telling stories of the absurd. And, you know, the absurdity of you as a drag queen feuding with the women and or me feuding with Kikyo the Fallen Flower here and,
right.
You know, the absurdity of all of that, besides the fact that, you know, in my case, I don't, you know, your size differential didn't look too dramatic when you were going against Marty Bell. I'm quite tall, and I was against Kikyo, who is quite short, which is hilarious, though we're the exact same weight. So.
Oh, trust me, there's a lot of times it looks unfair, and, like, that's why I love working with Maria Maddox, because she's my height, my size, and, you know, she looks, because she, like, she's a very pretty girl, she's
Well, you know, there's not much I can do. Like, I make sure that all the dimensions look feminine, but I'm still 6 foot tall out of heels. And when they've got me in there against Kikyo, who's like 5'2", it looks ridiculous. So...
But it's wrestling. Everything is ridiculous, you know?
Everything is. And if it's not, it should be.
Right.
So what is your next big show that people can look for you at?
This Saturday, June 17th, the second ever LGBT show, NYWC presents A Matter of Pride Volume 2. And I'm super stoked for it. I mean, it's unfortunate you're not coming down, but it's, you know, 90% of the LGBT wrestlers across the country are coming in for it.
And that's the one that Melina, I think, mentioned to me.
Yes. She was actually supposed to be in the area at the time, but she had to book it in, I believe, Scotland. So
yeah, she's,
you know,
in Europe right now.
She was supposed to come down, but unfortunately she can't. Maybe next time. But yeah, she's the one, like, she recently posted about it.
Well, after I get more in-ring experience and a little more exposure here in on the West Coast, next time,
girl,
you guys
come in and get the exposure here. Be our commissioner. See, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, next time you guys do one of these, let me know in advance, and I would, like, we'll try to make it happen. That would be so exciting.
For sure.
So, well, thank you for talking to us.
Of course. Anytime.
So,
So I'm glad, and we'll be looking out for you guys on June 17th for the LGBTQ show there, and I look forward to getting more details in the future.
Yes, you can follow all that information coming this weekend at nycwrestling.com, or you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at TheBoyDiva.
TheBoyDiva, honey. All right. Thank you, Ricky. Have a wonderful day, sweetheart.
Thank you so much, dear. Have a good night.
You too.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, you guys, that's Ricky Cataldo, the boy diva. He is one of the East Coast professional wrestling scene's most premier, prominent, actually out LGBTQ professional wrestlers. Follow him online at all of his social media at The Boy Diva. I'm Poet Almar, and I will be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Hallelujah, this is Tangela, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Toyo and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
Clock the bag.
Clock the shoe.
Clock the shoe.
Now punch the clock. It's time to work.
All right, everybody. I'm back. This is Poet Almar. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. And we just heard from Ricky Cataldo, a professional wrestler based on the East Coast. You can follow him at The Boy Diva. Now we're going to go back in time just a little bit to our recent interview with Andy Bell of iconic pop electronica group Erasure. They've been making music for over 30 years, and their new album, World Be Gone, just hit the top 10 on the UK charts. I encourage you to go check out their new single, Love You to the Sky, which is available on YouTube for viewing and listening. But more importantly, the song that really, really touched me is Still It's Not Over, which is Andy's commentary on the AIDS crisis as it happened in the 80s and 90s and how it continues today. Andy, of course, is an HIV positive musician. We are happy to have him. Please welcome our recap of my interview with Andy Bell to Party Foul Radio. Rumor has it, certainly, that you are currently working on a brand new album, so I want to know details.
That's all done. It's all done and polished. And it was a much more, less poppy record, I suppose, and a bit more serious.
Okay.
Yeah, I think because of the kind of, because of the current political climate, and here with Brexit in the UK and Trump in the US, it was kind of like, I felt quite estranged from the kind of the human race and a bit disappointed in them, you know, and just thinking like how people are so sheep-like and they just follow orders and it's, we just seem to be in the same old routine going round and round again, you know, and getting ready for war and all this stuff. I just wish people would just wake up a bit, you know. The record is kind of a reflection of Vincent and my moods, really, you know, from over the past 6 months, I suppose.
You mentioned you guys are very much associated with electronic dance music and pop music. And yeah. How do you make the jump from that to including political themes and political opinions?
Right. I think what happened, I think because we did, because the last record, The Violet Flame, was like a pure straight down the line dance album, I've been kind of feeling a bit frustrated over the past year and a half and thinking like, because pop is so young, it's such a young person's game now, and I just hate the, it kind of gets more and more commercial. After a while, you just think, not that you reject the pop sensibility, but you just think like, you want to do something that's relevant to you, you know, and you want to write about something that you care about, and hopefully that other people will care about, because you just feel like people are so easily manipulated just by an image. You just kind of want to hopefully make people realize that what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, without getting too heavy about stuff, you know.
With most artists, as they have felt comfortable in their success, it becomes something where they realize when you have success, yeah, you have the opportunity, you're given a platform and you're given an audience that will listen to a little bit of a message.
Yes, I think so too. You know, it's the whole pop thing just becomes facile in some ways, you know. I mean, you love it. I love it. I'm a fan, and I love kind of like candy floss pop and all that sort of stuff. But I think after a while, you just want to satisfy yourself, you know.
All right, everybody. That was Andy Bell of iconic group Erasure. Their new album, World Be Gone, is available for download now. To get our complete interview with Andy Bell,
scroll back to previous episodes and check out episode 63. All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. We are ready to wrap this episode up, hunty.
You know.
So, Pearl, what is on your agenda for this weekend? Do you have a busy one?
I do, and it's possible it could be jam-packed, but it's possible I'll have a day to myself. I forget what I'm doing Friday. But
Friday's the 16th. Hinty.
Saturday.
The 17th.
I am going to... Oh, so Friday, I don't know how many of you in the Bay Area know Tita Ida. She booked me at this private gig in Alameda.
I love Tita Ida.
Girl, this gig is... Girl pays coin, too. But anyway, so that's going on Friday, and it's a day gig.
Nice. Very so nice.
Take a nice little day off of work. Just to work. But Saturday, I'm going to a friend of mine, it's a friend of mine's wedding. She's getting married to her partner. Shout out to Vanessa and Otilia.
Aw, lesbian wedding.
Right, my first one, too. I am having the hardest time finding...
Girl, speak up. These bitches are never going to hear you.
Right, I'm having the hardest time finding something to wear. But...
Why are you having a hard time finding something to wear?
To a wedding, because I've never had to go to a wedding as a female. And
I thought you did before. Like a year ago.
I did before as a performer.
Okay.
Very different. So that's going on Saturday.
And, oh, that's sweet.
And then Sunday, my brother actually graduates from Stanford. Now, we don't know if I'm going to go or not, just because we don't know... I don't know if it'll be safe or not, just because I know my dad will be there, and I don't... We don't know if the way that it's going to be set up, if it's big enough for us both to go and not run into each other. Because I don't want to risk going there and running into him and...
Creating a scene at your brother's graduation?
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be ugly.
And the thing is, I really do want to see him graduate and... I don't know. It just sucks that I'm going to have to miss out on certain parts of his life.
Well, what about the possibility... Like, your father wouldn't recognize you right now.
I think he would. I'm sure he would have... I think he would.
I mean, you could just go and, like, sit somewhere else and be like...
That's what I'm hoping for, but we don't... Like I said, I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think it's great that you are at least mindful of this, and... Because, you know, there's some people who would be like, ow! Letting them stop me. And I mean,
girl,
I get
you go end up dead, girl.
And I get that right. Attitude as well, but you sometimes you have to be like, okay, the greater good here
right.
is about the fact that this is something that's super important for a third person and like right.
that it, at an event that's not about you.
Right.
And girl, you don't need to be in danger for
Molly, you in danger, girl.
Right. For something that
right. That's you know. True. Absolutely true.
So yeah, that kind of sucks, but we'll see. I mean, things like this make me like wonder like what it's going to be like when he gets married and stuff like this. And it's just really sad.
Well, but, yeah. Hopefully as time progresses, like more she'll be revealed, you know, more she'll be
revealed,
but more will be revealed. Like how you're going to deal with things. Like as time passes, you may have better coping mechanisms than you have, or things may become more clear, or boundaries may become more clear, or the way that you, like, maybe your brother is going to at some point be like, have to lay down the law and be like, you know what? I want her here, and I want you here, and you both have to act like adults. And the one who doesn't think they can act like an adult is the one who has to sit this one out.
Right.
You know, I mean...
Right, totally, but at the same time... I don't want to put my brother in that situation.
Right, I do understand that, but what this... Part of what this means to me is when we grow up, when we, you know, there's a time when we interact with our parents as parent-child. And there will always be scenarios throughout life where that situation comes into play, that dynamic comes into play. But there are times, as I had to learn later in my life, where whether my dad was my dad or not, I had to interact with him as an adult. I don't have to, it's father, son, but not parent, child anymore.
Right.
It's like, we're both grown people. And like, for example, when my grandfather passed away, my dad, I flew home right away and my family was coping and it was a real shock. When my grandfather passed away and then everybody was in shock and we're sitting there and everybody's like in his home and we're all devastated by this. And my dad starts talking about things in financial terms, like, well, we could do this and this. And it was very upsetting to my sister, my mom, me. And then finally I said, Dad, we're not going to do this. Like, right. All, you know, he had insurance, everything, all the bills are paid. There's nothing that's, we don't have to start selling this off when he literally is sitting at the morgue right now. He's not even buried yet. Mm-hmm. And it pissed him off that I was speaking to him that way. And he was getting ready to storm out. And I went and I told all my family, I was like, you just sit right here. I'm going to go deal with this. I'm going to take care of it. And I'm going to have a conversation with him. And I went and I sat down and spoke to him like one adult to another. I was like, you are hurting right now. Your father just passed away. I respect and understand that you must be going through a lot of turmoil, but you also have to understand that there are other people here who are here to support you. And we want to support you emotionally. We want to support you in any way that we can, but you addressing things in this, from this perspective is hurting their feelings. It's hurtful to them. Mm-hmm. And that was a shift of dynamics because it wasn't like the dad getting to boss around the whole family. It was a grown man going home to address his father and say, we're not going to do this right now.
Right.
You know, and like that may be a situation that your brother will have to step into later in life where whether you force him to or not, where he has to say like, I'm a grown person. I love you. I love her. Mm-hmm. And this is my moment and I want you both here. So you need to deal with you and she'll deal with her. And if we can't do that, then this whole thing is something's got to give.
Right.
And that's like the shift of the dynamics between parent child to son, daughter, father, you know, like whatever the, you know, two grown people who understand that they have a role with each other, but it's like reclaiming, like one of the most powerful things is interacting with people as an adult, not the person that you were when they had some power over you or some situation. It's like, no, that doesn't fly anymore. Like I'm grown now.
Right.
And a lot in your situation from a third party who's heard a lot of the interaction, your dad like kind of forfeited any right he had to have any say in your life.
Right.
By just being non-existent for you. Mm-hmm. So the fact that your brother got a different experience, but now you're present for him. Right. And that situation, from what I've heard from you, is only going to grow. So he's educated too. Your brother's educated, very intelligent. And at some point he might do that, you know, with you, where you won't have to do a whole lot in terms of that. Yeah. So I mean, that's what I meant by more will be revealed. More as time progresses, things develop and sometimes other scenarios step in to be like, this isn't about you two anymore.
Right.
This isn't about you. It's not about that. So.
Well, we'll see.
Yes. And from us to you, congratulations on your graduation, sweetheart. That is like phenomenal. Yeah,
seriously. Like, I'm so proud of him.
Yeah, of course. So proud of him. And from such a good school, shit, you should be proud of him.
Yes.
So, you guys, my weekend is not going to be that exciting. Not exciting like hers. Of course, I'm going to be doing a show called Mascara, which is hosted by one of my besties, MGM Grand, on Saturday night. It's going to be a fundraising event for the Castro Country Club, which is instrumental in the lives of many people in the Castro who are looking for an opportunity in a space where recovery is possible, recovery from addiction and alcoholism and bazillion other isms, because they got a meeting for everybody there. And so I'm going to be supporting that and helping her out by doing an appearance at her show. And then I've got to get my act together because Saturday night is Madonna night at Mother. And I have a whole concept in my head, but I need to make it happen. Otherwise, it's going to be pathetic and I'm not having that. So that's Saturday night. And then Sunday night, of course, we will be at the Glamazone at the cafe with the cast of girls. So please come out and visit us. See us. You guys have only got about 5 more weeks of this.
A little bit over a month.
So come out and support the girls while we're, you know, counting down to our final hurrah. Meanwhile, we will be back with more celebrity interviews, more fabulosity, gossip, and, you know, across the board, Kiki. next week for episode 71. But this is episode 70. You've been listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease. But don't forget to check out our sponsors.
Girl, we are. Yes. Check out our sponsors, you guys.
GuideToGay.com.
LiveLeft.com. LiveLeft.com magazine. Left magazine.
Check out Daddy's Barbershop over on Castro and 19th.
And of course, get your slippery on with... Get your slippery on with Swiss Navy Premium Lubes, y'all.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Party Foul Radio.
At Party Foul Radio. All right, you guys, this one's in the books. We're out of here.
Bye.
Bye, Z's. It's over. It's over.